This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278.
Doug McBurney here from the Colorado March for Life. It's been an amazing year since Colorado became the leader of the pro-life personhood movement. When we put personhood on the Colorado ballot in 2008, we inspired a movement, and now 40 states have joined us. So join me and the leaders of the personhood movement at the Colorado March for Life. It's at high noon, Friday, January 22nd, on the west steps of the Colorado Capitol. Let's encourage the thousands of Christian volunteers gathering signatures for personhood, and together, Colorado will encourage the personhood movement nationwide. That's Friday, January 22nd at high noon on the west steps of the Colorado Capitol. Call us now, ask for a personhood petition, or you could pick one up at the march. Go online to ColoradoMarchForLife.com or call 303-459-4005. That's ColoradoMarchForLife.com, 303-459-4005. And I'll see you at the March for Life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Inyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Fred, you're also the webmaster for the esteemed Creation Research Society.
Yes, and today we're going to go through one of their esteemed journals, the Creation Research Society Quarterly, the fall edition of 2009.
Fall of 2009. Now, this is our first episode for 2010.
The first one in 2010, the first of many to come.
Many Real Science Friday shows. And in fact, there's a Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship meeting
at Bethlehem Lutheran Church, and that's on Wadsworth and 21st, and that's at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
And he's going to be talking about human population growth and how it just utterly refutes any possibility.
So if you couldn't get there last month, same topic, just come on out this month.
That's right.
It'll be great. Now,
that's right.
Fred, in this 2009 fall edition of the Quarterly, this is not like Creation Magazine, which we so often go through. This is more technical.
It's more technical. It's a peer-reviewed journal. There's quite a few scientists that review it. So you've got to really know your muster to get this thing to even be published.
And the first article we want to look at in some depth is about stars as they burn. They're using energy, but you don't use up energy, but it becomes less available, less useful, and that's called entropy.
Entropy. I think that's one of your favorite topics.
I like the topic of entropy. Shows that I'm weird, you know?
Yeah, I knew that you'd like this article.
I'm a science nerd. you must have been thinking about me when you're reading this, because I like when things break down.
Yeah, and that's what entropy is all about,
everything
from order to disorder.
Everything around me is breaking down. I'm breaking down,
yeah,
Fred.
Yeah, I remember my mom would make my bed, and then next thing I know, it'd be a mess.
Yeah, what's with that? Why do we have to clean our rooms all the time? Well, this is about stars and the whole universe and the increase in entropy. Entropy is a measure of the disorder of energy, and there's other kinds of entropy, like information entropy. There's all kinds of entropy, actually.
Yeah, that's going to be important, I think, to this topic.
Yeah, where things go from order to disorder. Well, this article is by James Powell, and it's really great. He talks about the second law of thermodynamics. And so that means we're talking about energy entropy, not information entropy.
That's right. And he introduces the second law of thermodynamics as an immutable law of physics never violated by observation or experiment.
Wow. So the second law of thermodynamics has never been violated in any closed or bounded system. And what that means is if you look at how much disorder is in, say, the entire universe, if we think of the entire universe as a closed system or a bounded system. So is that valid? The whole universe is our laboratory.
Yes, you can look at it that way.
Yeah, the whole universe. And if we look at the amount of disorder in the universe, It's continually increasing, and so that must point us to an initial state where there was a very high order of energy.
That's right.
Now, is that all logical so far, or is that silly science?
It makes sense to me, and I think if you bear with us, this is all makes sense for you out there who hopefully aren't turning to sports radio right now.
That's right. And in fact, Einstein, Albert Einstein, argues that this makes sense. Stephen Hawking, Richard Dawkins, people who hate God or people who don't believe in God, and creationists, we all have one thing that we agree about. Entropy is increasing, and then we ask, what does that mean about the entire universe? Well, the first guy who said, who published, that stars, the light and heat, the energy that radiates from stars, is coming from a subatomic process. You probably remember his name, Fred. It's in this article.
Yeah, guy named Eddington.
Sir Arthur Eddington. This was 80 years ago. He proposed that stars, they're not burning fuel the way a coal oven or a coal engine burns fuel. He proposed that there's a subatomic process that is fueling star combustion.
That's right. And at the time, he didn't know what that process was, but we now know that that's nuclear fusion.
Nuclear fusion, that's exactly right. And so way back in 1929, he wrote something. You think you could share that quote with us?
Yeah, this is what, again, Sir Arthur Eddington said at that time. The law that entropy always increases, the second law of thermodynamics, holds, I think, the supreme position among the laws of nature. Now, he's saying that entropy increases. Let's remind the audience that that means an increase in disorder.
In disorder, and specifically when we're talking about physics, the disorder of energy. Energy disorder.
That's right. Your desk is all nice with papers on it and everything's in order, and then you open the window and a big wind gust blows in. It blows everything out of place. So that's an increase in entropy. That's disorder,
you're giving an analogy
to this.
And then it's going to take more energy to put them back on the desk.
That's right. I'll have to do the work to put them back on the desk when I could have been downstairs watching a movie.
All right. So Eddington says that he thinks the supreme law of all the laws of nature is that energy disorder always increases. Fred, let me continue Eddington's quote. He says, if your pet theory of the universe is contradicted by observation, he said, well, then the telescope must be faulty. Look, if observation contradicts your theory, which happens all the time, then, hey, the telescope must have a problem with it. But if your theory is found to be against the second law of thermodynamics, I can give you no hope. There is nothing for it but to collapse in deepest humiliation. I like the way they spoke.
Yeah, pretty serious law of science.
A long time ago. Yeah, so that was in 1927. Now, let's fast forward 80 years to 2007 with a professor of physics from the University of California, Professor Thomas Banks. And he wrote in 2007, quote, the second law of thermodynamics is one of the most robust and profound physical principles. Ever since the discovery of the second law, physics has been faced with the question of why the universe began in a low entropy state.
So a low entropy state would be
everything is organized.
Everything is organized.
There's great order in the entire universe, and ever since then, it's been moving toward disorder, all the energy. And he says, so for a century, we've had the same problem, and this is from atheists.
That's right.
The same problem saying, how could it be that the universe is winding down energy-wise? How could it have appeared all wound up? How could that have happened? This is really fascinating to me.
Yeah, so James Powell, the author of this article that we're going through, he noted that in the whole universe, energy from billions of stars light up the galaxies, producing a large and possibly the predominant entropy source.
Yeah, in the whole universe, all these stars are burning, and he says that's where we're getting most of our entropy from. What a great point. And Fred, can I make an observation? This doesn't have to do with science, but the discovery of the second law, the discovery, I love the use of that word, because laws are to be discovered, not invented. And this is true in criminal law and regarding morality. The government has no authority to make up a law that says, okay, marriage is between two men. You can't make up laws. You can only discover them. And the government cannot say, okay, you can murder a child before it's 6 months old. The government has no authority to make up laws. Laws are there. They reflect the nature of the physical universe and the moral and spiritual creatures that we are as designed by God.
Doesn't it seem like we are always trying to create our own laws? I mean, it goes right back to the Garden of Eden, right, where Eve created a law, per se, by saying you can't touch of
you,
the...
You can't even touch
you
it.
You can't even touch it, where God never said that.
He said you can't eat of that tree.
That's right.
Right, and we add to God's law, and we remove from God's law to our peril.
That's right.
All right, so now there's an enormous source of energy, Fred, that must have been there for the initial state of order in the universe to have existed. So since order, energy order has been moving toward disorder for the entire age of the universe, we know that when it started, it had to be very well ordered. And that's going to be the theme of the rest of this article.
That's right. I mean, right after this, he makes a very profound statement. Again, the author, James Powell, that entropy is one of the greatest witnesses of God's sovereign power. And then he goes on to quote a popular verse among creationists, Romans 8:20-21.
Yes. You have that?
I do. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God.
Wow. So the creation was subject to futility, and that is because the Creator designed it that way. And Fred, this points to the fact that stars and galaxies, they die. They're going to die unless God intervenes and creates a new heaven and a new earth. I think I read that somewhere, that God's going to do that.
Create a new heavens, a new earth. That's in 1st or 2nd Peter? 2nd Peter.
I'm so excited. And in the book of Revelation.
Oh, that's right.
Right? Isn't that exciting? I've read the end of the book.
And yeah. And,
it's a
you know,
good book, too.
And I think we've long said that we believe in the Big Bang. It just hasn't happened yet.
That's right. That's exactly right here on Real Science Friday. And so not only do stars die, but humans die. We die. People die. And Fred, this is merciful. This is what's being taught by the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 8. That the creation itself is subject to futility. It's wearing down. The stars wear down as a garment. The Bible teaches us that. Everything is wearing out. And this is merciful because the alternative, Fred, is that if death was not a result of rebellion against God, then rebellion has brought about, of course, sin. Rebellion is sin. And disease. And hatred. Animosity. And the alternative to death is to exist forever in disease-ridden bodies as sin-prone beings. That is not a paradise. That's hell on earth. If we were to live forever with disease and animosity.
So, in a way, is death kind of a blessing?
Death is kind of a blessing. Death is merciful from God, who will deliver us from this body of death. If we trust in Jesus Christ and his resurrection, we shall be raised to live forever. So now we get into some details about the second law of thermodynamics. And I bet you we can talk about this without the audience's eyes glazing over.
Okay, this should be a challenge.
It's a challenge.
I'm exciting to...
Now, the guy who first figured out he quantified entropy, his name was Boltzmann. Do you remember anything interesting about his tombstone?
His tombstone? No, I don't.
His tombstone, it's quite a, you got to look it up.
I knew you loved this entropy stuff, but this is these are real good details.
This is, you got to look it up on Wikipedia, Fred. His tombstone has the equation for entropy engraved on the top of the tombstone.
Oh, okay.
Boltzmann. And the equation for entropy is described in units, popularly, the way we use it, in units of J over K. What in the world is J over K?
Well, that's joules over Kelvin.
But those poor two guys who
are those guys?
Who stepped on who?
Yeah.
You mean Jules was stepping on Kelvin?
Yeah, Jules was all over Kelvin. But you know what's interesting, Bob? Aren't these guys creationists, Bible-believing creationists?
These were creationists, and they lived after Darwin, and they're two of the significant fathers of the physical sciences, so that when people talk physics today, they can't do it without referencing Jules and Kelvin. Like Lord Kelvin, that's where we get the absolute standard for temperature from Kelvin. Zero Kelvin is absolute zero.
That's right. And I actually use Kelvin. I quote Kelvin in my when I post to on the internet in my forum and other forums.
Mm-hmm.
He once said that overwhelming strong proofs of intelligent and benevolent design lie around us. The atheistic idea is so nonsensical that I cannot even put it into words.
So nonsensical. That was Kelvin.
And that was Kelvin. And if you think about it, all of the major branches of science, or the if you look at the founding fathers
I wouldn't say all, Fred. I would say so many.
Yes, yeah. Well, I'm saying all the branches of science.
Oh.
Their founding fathers, the vast majority of them,
the majority
were Bible-believing Christians.
What people who rejected some kind of an atheistic or materialistic evolutionary worldview, and they believed in special creation by a personal God. And, Fred, we have this on Theology Online. I produced a list of the fathers of the physical sciences, and it's broken up into before Darwin and after Darwin. And it is astounding how many scientists, including after Darwin, rejected evolution and some kind of a materialistic explanation for the universe, including people like Copernicus and Isaac Newton and Galileo and
On and on. Louis Pasteur, Maxwell.
So many. Genetics, Mendel, and just it's thrilling to see. And what it proves, it doesn't prove that we're right, Fred, because you don't decide what's right and wrong by majority vote. What it proves is the evolutionists are misleading people when they say that educated people accept Darwinism. It proves that they're misleading people when they say that, because there are countless brilliant scientists, including many of the founders of the physical sciences, who rejected Darwin and naturalistic explanations.
Yeah, and it also, when they say that creation isn't science, and yet they forget that all these major branches of science have at their bedrock these great creation scientists.
So Kelvin, his very name is used for the absolute scale of temperature.
That's right.
Degrees Kelvin. We use Fahrenheit. In Europe, what do they use over there in Europe?
I'm not sure, but didn't they have a cartoon about him? Oh, no, that's Calvin, sorry.
Calvin, Celsius.
Calvin and Jules.
Calvin and Jules, that's right. They use Celsius over in Europe, we use Fahrenheit, but the scientists tend to use Kelvin.
Yes.
Degrees Kelvin. And Joules, that's a measure of the amount of work done over time, like joules per second. So these are brilliant guys, and a change in entropy is contrasted, Fred, from an initial state to a final state or a subsequent state. So when you move from order to disorder, that's a change in entropy.
That's right, and it brings up a great point that Powell mentions in his article. The initial state of entropy corresponds to the perfect order at creation.
Whoa, I like that. I like that. So then what Powell does, that I enjoy things like this when people try to quantify what's happening in the universe, Fred. He looks at stars as they radiate, and he says, okay, now they're contributing to the overall entropy of the universe. So every second, how much is the overall entropy of the universe increasing? And he says, well, stars, they diffuse every second into the blackness of space, right? And he has a little formula where he says T equals 2.725. T equals 2.725. What's that about?
That sounds familiar. That sounds like the cosmic background radiation, something they call CMB.
CMB, the microwave background radiation of the universe, which the scientists, astrophysicists, they put the telescopes up to black space, and they see that there's a temperature of 2.7 degrees Kelvin. There's Kelvin again.
Yep.
For the whole universe.
And, you know, that's a horrible problem for evolution. This is kind of a side argument, Bob, but why is that background radiation the same everywhere in the universe? It's the same temperature everywhere. Why is that a problem for the evolutionists?
It's a huge problem because if the universe is 15 billion years old, 14 point whatever, that's not nearly enough of time by orders of magnitude for the whole universe to reach the same temperature.
Yeah, so it's their own speed of light problem, because if you can imagine the whole universe on your wall, just look at a wall, and take your finger, create an inch, and that's about how far light can travel in the alleged 20 billion years age of the
universe.
So there's a huge problem for evolutionists, but they don't talk about that one very much.
In other words, light carries energy.
That's right.
And so the temperature of the universe would begin to gradually even out based on standard heat flow equations, the same equations they use when they design your refrigerator and they want food in the freezer to get cold and stay cold, and they go through a defrost cycle. Well, the equations they use there are similar, or really the fundamental equations are the same as they use with the Big Bang. And the theory of, well, how is it that the whole universe is now the same temperature? There's not enough time, so something doesn't fit. And that one, like you said, that's just one tiny side issue.
That is. And it's
which
just,
is massive.
It's as if the universe was created in place.
Yeah, that's what it is, as if.
Yeah, because their attempts to explain it basically come up with
right.
that kind of explanation.
Yeah.
Inflation theory. They're trying to figure out a way for this to happen rapidly.
So, Fred, we have then Powell, the author of this article. He's from Texas, by the way. He's trying to figure out, well, what's the increase in entropy of the whole universe? And he says, when you take the estimated size of the universe with the billions of stars and billions of galaxies, he comes up with a value which he says is about 10, think of a 10 with 49 zeros, joules per second. There's joules again.
Well, just to help the audience, and I don't know if this will help, but 10 to the 80th power is the number of molecules that are estimated to exist in the entire universe.
The number of particles.
Yes.
Particles.
Particles.
In the entire
yeah.
universe. Subatomic particles.
Just think how many particles are in a piece of sand on this beach.
Yeah, right. Millions. And so, right, this is an enormous number. That's the enormous amount of increase in entropy every second. And then he says the amount of time that light takes to get from the sun to the earth, there is an increase in entropy of 10 with 51 zeros joules Kelvin. So tremendous amount. In other words, the universe is wearing down at a rate that is just so extraordinary. We can't fathom it, really. And so then there's a question. Now, if disorder results only from order, then what is the initial source of the order of the energy of the universe?
Well, I like how Powell sums this up. He says that since energy cannot be created or destroyed naturally, which is what evolution would say, right?
Right.
And every natural or spontaneous process tends to disorder, which we know that by common sense.
Right, and science.
Then the origin of order cannot be natural, but it has to be. It must be supernatural.
The origin of energy order, I always like to add energy order, cannot be natural, but must be supernatural. Praise God. Now, the same thing is true about information order also, Fred, and information entropy, but that is a related but different topic. But praise God for Powell's article and how clear, and I love how he's quantifying this. You know how we put it in Bob Enyart Live lingo? Have you heard the argument we've made over the years, over 20 years on Bob Enyart Live, when an atheist calls in and says, what's your evidence for a supernatural creator?
Isn't that there's something with a rock and fire? And
yeah, could you describe that, Fred?
Sure, a rock cannot make itself from nothing.
Right.
And can a fire burn forever?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Have you been there and tested it?
It uses up its available fuel, and then because entropy increases, the energy can perform less work. It becomes more useless. Just dissipates into useless heat energy.
Can't you just create new energy from scratch?
No, you can't do that. You could convert matter to energy and energy to matter, which is harder, but you cannot. The first law of thermodynamics, a rock cannot make itself from nothing. And you know, God is extraordinary, but there's one thing a God could not do, a God could not make himself from nothing. Not even a God can do that. And so God was always here.
The first cause.
The first cause, the uncaused cause, and he created the physical universe. Now, Fred, here's what I would love to do, if this is okay with you. We're about out of time. I'd like us to continue with this article in a second show and then talk about some of the other articles in this issue, but not in as much detail. Would that be all right with you?
Yeah, that sounds great. What do you think, audience? I think they approve.
The audience approved. We saw a thumbs up from our studio audience. And, Fred, so I'm excited about that. We could remind people one more time about tonight's meeting at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship.
Yes, it's our monthly meeting, the second Friday of every month at Bethlehem Lutheran Church on Wadsworth and 21st Avenue. Real easy to get to.
And that's at 7 o'clock.
It's at 7 o'clock.
And I strongly urge people to go. I've been to so many of these meetings. They're so much fun. And you get to meet a super bunch of people.
That's right. And again, tonight,
people.
Dr. Ed Boudreau will be presenting on human population growth, and I've seen the presentation, and it's fantastic.
And we sort of previewed that on this show a month ago on Real Science Friday with Dr. Boudreau in the studio here, and it's going to be a great presentation. So come on out tonight at 7 o'clock. Also, Fred, I have it on inside information that there will be a petition there people could sign for Colorado's personhood amendment to get on the ballot again.
That's right. The vice president of our organization, Tony Macy, has done great work in that area, and we will have that for you to sign.
And you know what else will be there? Some extra petitions that people can take with them.
Yeah, because in order to make this happen, you got to take them with you and,
yeah.
You know, take them to your friends. A lot of, you know, you'll be surprised how many people will be willing to sign this.
How many people are excited to sign it? People appreciate it. And
absolutely.
Some people say, can I get a petition? I want to get signatures too, because they recognize we have a creator God who made us in his image. And when we kill that baby, we've ripped the arms and legs off that baby. Planned Parenthood does it in their abortion clinics, that is murder. And we're dishonoring God, and we're destroying the mother and the father of that child, and we're killing the baby.
That's right.
So the personhood movement is on a roll, Fred, in 40 states, and it started in Colorado in 2008 when we got on the ballot. That's what energized the modern personhood movement.
It's been fantastic, and keep up the good work, Bob.
All right. Thank you, Fred Williams. What an honor. And Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, what a fabulous school. Get in touch with Maranatha if you live in the Denver metropolitan area. Cheryl and I have had our boys attending Maranatha on and off for 25 years. Fred, you have any experience with Maranatha?
Well, I do. I have a 13-year-old son and a 9-year-old girl that have been attending Maranatha for, I think, about 5 years, and we're definitely plan on having them go all the way through. It's a great school. It really is. I think it's the best school in Colorado.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm being biased.
No, I think it is the best school in Colorado. And they're young earth creationists.
Yes.
They're pro-life. They teach young people about marriage between a man and a woman. It's really a great school. And all the science and academics and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
All right. God bless you. And please, Colorado, right to life. This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278.